So now we will go back to the 8th chapter. 8th, 9th, and 10th will continue from now. And this 8th chapter is a very difficult chapter. Why it is a difficult chapter? You see, in astrology, the 8th house is referred to death. When the planets position the 8th house is related to death. And this 8th chapter, you will see something interesting. It's all about death. Nothing else. Krishna has only one thing to say about death. That's what he's going to say in this 8th chapter. So on the one side, it is very interesting chapter also, because that's what's waiting for us, isn't it? So from that point of view, it's a very important chapter. And again, you will see when we go through this chapter, what all misconceptions we are carrying about death with us. So many misunderstanding about death. We have, like bhakti, we have manufactured about death also in the same way. We are thinking that certain things, oh, if I do these things, everything will be all right. I'll get through somehow. Somebody will take me there and get me out of this place. I'll be all right in the next life. It is not so simple as Krishna mentions in this chapter. Only when you understand that if there is not enough preparation in this life, death will not be a very pleasant thing at the end. Will not be a very pleasant thing. Why? Because Krishna has given us this life to prepare for death, actually. That is how it is. We have been sent here to get out of this state of death. That means we don't have to go through death again, once more. Death. This body, what we have got, we have to give it up one day. But after that, experiencing death is again a painful situation. So that is why that 8th chapter is a difficult chapter to explain also, because there is so many technical words there. And not only that, while concluding the 7th chapter, Krishna has put an introduction to the 8th chapter in the 7th chapter itself. If you observe all these things, you will see the interesting side of the 8th chapter. Even if you read that purport of the, if you read that 8th chapter in the Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, sometimes it is very hard. We know it is very hard. You won't make any sense. Ultimately, you will see a lot of words there. Adibodham, Adideivam, Adiyajnam. So many things mentioned there. What is it all means? You won't get anywhere, any clear understanding of that. So therefore, when the 7th chapter finished there, the question started coming from Arjuna. Because 7th chapter is also equally important, isn't it? If you remember, we discussed 7th chapter, knowledge of the absolute. If you have followed up that chapter, if you remember that still, you will know how difficult that chapter is, the 7th chapter was, isn't it? So from 7th chapter, we are moving on to this 8th chapter. And here is saying, Krishna is saying here that a difficult chapter. From the very beginning, I have to, every chapter is difficult. Bhagavad Gita, there is no chapter which is easy. If you take, probably the only easiest chapter is the first chapter itself, where they were in the battlefield and they were ready to fight. That's all basically. And Arjuna started talking to Krishna, and Krishna didn't say anything in that chapter, so therefore the chapter is very easy to follow. Because Krishna didn't say anything. But from the second chapter onwards, when Krishna started speaking, he started bringing out the truth. In our spiritual life also, you can see, before we get to know the truth, what the truth is, you will have to go through a lot of experiences in this world, isn't it? So many things in that process you will accept and then you will reject it later. That's a part of spiritual life. It is not that everything what we took on the first day will remain with us till the end. Many things will come to us, we will leave it behind. Later on, as and when we get a deeper understanding, we leave them behind. We will say like this, in them days I didn't know anything about it, so I just took it as accepted it. People always have this experience, isn't it? So similarly, here in Bhagavad Gita also, as soon as you leave that first chapter, as soon as you leave the first chapter, and from then onwards, from second chapter is also a very difficult chapter. Krishna spoke about the Sanghi, the particularly about the Sanghyam and Karmam in that chapter. Contents of the Bhagavad Gita summarized. It's a summary of everything, the very cream of Bhagavad Gita in that second chapter. And then from third chapter onwards, Krishna started talking about karma, isn't it? Karma Yoga. how if you don't do that first, you don't have to go further. It's no pointless after that. If that third chapter is not taken on board, then all your so-called bhakti, jnanam and all is a waste of time as far as Krishna is concerned. So that's why even when that preliminary understanding of karma yogam has not happened and they are talking about bhakti yogam, and that is very painful to see that. That even the very basic, what Krishna is saying, that's why right after second chapter, Krishna took karma yogam first as a topic for to understand, to make it clear to us that how karmam is the whole problem behind everything what's happening. And so third, fourth, fifth, sixth, all these chapters are nothing but a supplementary to that karma yogam chapter. The first six chapters, the karma yogam is the important topic. And right up to the sixth chapter, karmam is the topic that is discussed there, that we have seen when we discussed those chapters. Then in the seventh chapter, Krishna called this as Jnana Vijnana Yogam, which we discussed as knowledge of the Absolute. How to understand Krishna? What is Krishna? That begins in that chapter. In that chapter, it is begins there. Mayasakta manapartha yogam yunjan madashraya asamshayam samagramam idajnyasasi takshrano jnanam teham savijnanam idam vakshyam asheshada yajnyatva nehabhuyanyal jnadavyam avashesha. Krishna is saying there so many things about himself. He is introducing himself to us in that chapter in the Jnana Vijnana Yogam. Understand me, understand you, he says. Who I am and who you are. And that our connection with Krishna is that chapter, seventh chapter, where he says there, Bhumi, Apam, Analo, Vayu, Kham, Manam, Buddhi, Evacha, Ahangari, Diyame, Bhinna, Prakriti, Rashtada. That we are made of these eight things, Ashtada, Prakriti, which are the five material elements, then mind, intelligence, and false ego. That is in us. And what is Krishna? Apareya Midasthanyam, Prakriti, Vidhime, Param. Krishna is that. What is that? Jiva, Bhudam, Mahabhaho. Which is Krishna himself has become Jiva. In other words, Jiva is nothing but the same consciousness. Krishna is consciousness. And that consciousness, when it accepts, conditioned by false ego, he becomes Jiva. Jiva Bhudam Mahabaho Yedam Dharide Jagat. So an understanding of us, what we are, with these eight things, five material elements, mind, intelligence, false ego, plus this, that is what we are. And Krishna is saying, Apareyam Idastunyam Prakritim Vidhi. He is Para Prakriti and we are Apara Prakriti. Apara Prakriti. So, Para Prakriti, Apara Prakriti. Krishna broke into two in that chapter and he discussed about himself, about us in that chapter. There is a lot of things Krishna spoke, which you may have to go back to that chapter and look at it. So, here, when we come to this eighth chapter, very difficult chapter also to explain. I'll go through the chapter. If you have got it, what Krishna is saying there, then you will feel a great deeper understanding of Bhagavad Gita. Because this eighth chapter, as I mentioned, it's all about death. Death is the most important topic discussed in this chapter. Why? Krishna considers life is only worthwhile if you prepare yourself for death. Otherwise, it's not worthwhile. All other things what you have done, who is going to take notice of all these things? What we have done? Many, many big people have come here and they have gone. Who cares about it? All that. But if Krishna's message in this eighth chapter, if we have taken seriously and understood the intricacies of death, how death is, how Krishna has set up the system in such a way, how we are controlled in all circumstances, and if we don't see the subtlety of all these things, because subtlety is spiritual life. Spiritual life is nothing but subtlety. That subtleness of the eighth chapter, if that goes in, you will see death is not a very simple affair, like we think about death. At the moment, what do we know about death? We know only one thing about death, that we'll be lying in somewhere. Either there will be doctors or nurses to give us something, and they'll be trying to fix the body at different places, wherever it's giving trouble. And one day, the soul leaves the body, which they are not bothered about. All they will do is that they will give you a certificate. You're dead. This is what our understanding of death at the moment, isn't it? This is what most of the people think about death. That our relatives will be standing there to get the certificate so that they can take him into the mortuary or to the burial place, wherever it is. The business is over with that. But Krishna has not spoken in that way. Krishna is talking to us, what is death? And a very detailed understanding of what is happening at the time of death. That's why this 8th chapter is a very important chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. You can see why. Because to get this chapter going itself, it is a difficult thing. Because in the beginning itself, Krishna put some very highly technical words. Adibhutam, Adidevam, Adiyajnam, all he says there. What is Adibhutam? What is Adidevam? What is Adiyajnam? Is very rarely understood by people in the proper way, which you can see. They are reading it, they are repeating it. Doesn't mean anything more than that. Lord Shiva had these famous devotees, 63 Nayanmars. They are famous for them. And they also sang this same problem. It is not only in the Vaishnava Siddhanta, in Shava Siddhanta also the same thing happens. They sang about death, and they also, when the realizations came to them, when they got released from this body, they accordingly, they sung about their experience in this life. Because their personality is also, when they were, while living in this body, they are great devotees, while living in this body itself, they got released from the body. So they sung about the experiences what they had. So only based on that, you can start this topic of death to discuss in that way. From the experience of those devotees who, while living in this world, they escape from death. When we say they escape from the death, what it means is death was not anymore a cause of anxiety for them, because while living in this body itself, they came to know they are not this body. Then there is death is not an issue anymore, isn't it? Why death is so frightening to us sometimes? Because we think that is coming one day to all of us, is it not? So, same thing, Sundaramurti Swami also mentioned the same thing, that we can only begin in that way. Buddha also said the same thing. Lord Buddha, what he did was that on a Vaishakha Paurnami day, Vaishakha month, on a Paurnami day, in Buddha Gaya, in Gaya, where Buddha was engaged in the meditation, so Buddha realized the truth on that particular day. He realized the truth. And he understood that so many lifetimes I have been building these buildings. That's the language they use. Building the buildings means, I've been building so many buildings means, I've been getting different bodies. This is nothing but, we build this body. We build this house where we are living. Is it not? Due to our karmam in this world, according to the karma vasana, according to our sankalpam inside, this will generate the next body. So who builds the body? We build the body ourselves. So that's what he's saying. In this form of the new buildings we have constructed one after the other. 8.4 million different buildings we have built. And only what happens is, when you finally find out who is constructing this building, then you have escaped. The person who is creating, then you don't have to build any more body, any more building after that. Once you find out who is building all these different buildings, if you have found that out, then you don't have to build any more after that. Because that comes to the end of that. So, indication to that is what is in this chapter in the beginning itself. So, first thing what Krishna says is, stop building these new buildings. That's how subtle this whole chapter is. In order to tell us that don't accept another body again. Krishna is putting it in this way to us, that don't create another, find out who the builder is. If you have found that out, then no more new buildings after that. In other words, to tell in a very nice way that don't transmigrate again to another body. That is the beginning of this chapter. That's why this chapter begins like that. So, first instruction is stop building. Stop this construction work. Come to an end. You had built enough bodies before. Again, you are now building for the next life, the next building. You are building now for the next building, isn't it? So like this, he kept on building different bodies. Sundaramurti mentions this. He says, I was a grass before, then I became a worm, then I became a snake. All these buildings we have built and we got inside that, those buildings. So that's what he mentions here. And you'll see in the Bhajagovindam also, we said that Punarabhi Jananam, Punarabhi Maranam, Punarabhi Janani Jadare Shayanam. Again birth, again death. And then what happens? Again goes back to another womb of another mother. Janani Jadare Shayanam. It is samsare. Ajarya Swamiji says, this transmigration of the soul from one body to another, Bahu Dustare, it's the most difficult thing that should happen to anybody. Kripaya Pare Pahi Murare, asking Krishna to show some mercy, to take me out of this cycle of birth and death. There is no other way. This is our problem in this life. There is no other problem. This changing body business, that is causing the whole issue. Sundaramurti Swamiji mentioned the same thing here. Ajari Swamiji also says the same thing. Punarabhi Jananam, Punarabhi Maranam. Punarabhi Janani Jadare Shayanam. Birth and death is one thing. But 10 months you have to go and live in another womb of another mother and go through all the miseries in there. It is samsare, bahudustare. It is the most difficult thing. Kripaya pare, pahi murare. Krishna, show some mercy and take us out of this cycle. That's what how they have prayed to this. So once you get absorbed in the building, then you have lost it. That's another interesting thing. If you, suppose you have built some building and you got busy with the building, then there is no chance of coming out from that. Krishna is going to warn us that in this chapter. So how careful we have to be. First thing, we have to stop building new buildings. Secondly, whatever building we have got it, we should not get too busy with that building also. You know what it means, isn't it? Yeah. It's all spoken in a way that somehow the message wants to get in somehow. It's not getting in. That's why we have to keep repeating this in all different ways. It's spoken like that. So, because if you get absorbed in the new building, then the trouble will start from there. There will be trouble from there. Because once you get into this building, new building, what happens is you will come to know that there is a lot of problems in the building, what we have got now. In this building, what we have got is a lot of problems, isn't it? Building will give you a lot of trouble from different places from the building. So that's what Buddha said. Lord Buddha said the same thing. He said, this is what I don't want to continue anymore. So, once again, I'm not going to create another building, he says there. And not only that, I want to escape from this building what I have created. From this building. So, and this can only happen that if he realizes every moment that if you realize this, that Krishna is doing all these things through us. Krishna is behind it. If we know that, we will get the proper instruction at the proper time in life, every moment, what we have to face through in life. Because that is the important part of that. That is what Krishna is going to take us into this chapter with this understanding. Suppose you don't understand Krishna is behind it. Who has told us to build the building? Krishna has told us to build the building. And who put us into this situation? Krishna has put us into the situation. Who got us attracted to the building? Krishna put us into that attraction also. Behind everything, Krishna is there. Without Krishna's sanction, nothing is happening. We have a lot of difficulties in understanding these things. I know that. It is not so simple. On one side, Krishna will say three modes of material nature is doing everything. On the other side, we will say that false ego is doing everything. On in a third place, you will notice that we have some freedom also, free will, what about that? All these questions will come. These things have to be understood in a proper way. That will come when you study Shastram in a proper way, that you will understand that three modes of material nature has its role to play. We have our role to play. Krishna has his role to play also. Behind everything, it is Krishna behind. But how Krishna operates that, we have to know that. then we have got our karma behind it, prarabdham, operating there. So people ask this question, which one of them is doing it? Is the prarabdham doing it, or the mind is doing it, or the modes of nature is doing it, or Krishna is doing it? Who is doing it? This question always comes, isn't it? People ask this question all the time. They ask this question. Why this question is coming is, if you understand what they are, what this modes of nature is, what prarabdham is, what Krishna is, we have to study Bhagavad Gita. There is no other way. Once you go through Bhagavad Gita full, and then you, if you have done enough contemplation of what Krishna has spoken, these things will be very clear, that there won't be any confusion about that. These questions will not come back again and bother us anymore. So, in this chapter, 8th chapter, Krishna is saying here that Krishna is doing everything and Krishna will give us the instruction as and when we need, provided we know that Krishna has told us that what he expects from us. What is that? Stop building. That's the first thing. Right now, while living in this building, we are busy with maintaining this building, and we are also busy with building the next house where we want to live. Isn't it? That's what we are happening. Through our karmam, karma vasana, and our activities, we are creating the next body, next material body. While doing all that thing, we are also busy with this building, this body, how to keep it going as long as it can. This is our life. This is how much freedom we have in the so-called life. These things, you cannot change it. We are all caught up in that state. Krishna is saying like that. So all these things, keeping this in mind, what Krishna said was in the 7th chapter, while concluding this chapter, Krishna says, as an introduction to the 8th chapter, he mentions there in the 29th verse, if you look, you will see there, Jara marana mokshaya mama shritaya dandiye te brahma tadvidho krishnam adhyalpam karma chaghilam. You will see a verse there. Jara marana mokshaya mama shritaya dandiye te brahma tadvidho krishnam adhyalpam karma chaghilam. That one verse is a right introduction to the 8th chapter. Krishna is saying there, this building business, what we have discussed now. If you want to free yourself from this business, what is that? Jara, Maranam, Moksham. Jara means old age. Maranam means death. Moksham means freedom from that. If this thing has to happen, Krishna is saying there, Mama Ashrita Yatandiye, you should understand Bhagavad Gita and you should take completely my shelter. Both necessary. Understand the science from Bhagavad Gita, how things are happening with us. Simultaneously, Mama Ashrita Yatandiye, you should put all your endeavor, all your sadhana, all your effort to escape from this world, completely taking my shelter, Krishna says. Because any sadhana what you do without taking Krishna's shelter is incomplete. It will go life after life because you have not taken shelter of Krishna. That's the main thing. Mamashritya yatandiye, Krishna says. He uses that word very correctly there. Mamashritya. Only by taking Krishna's shelter and yatandiye, you should endeavor. You should engage in spiritual life. Put all your best efforts as Krishna has spoken. Do everything what's necessary, but dependence on Krishna all the time. Without that, sadhana will not work. That means surrender is a key to sadhana. Otherwise, sadhana has no meaning. Nowadays, we make it like this. Oh, you just chant 16 rounds, you chant. And that's it. Or 4 regulative principles. That's enough. Where is the surrender there? There is no surrender. And because of that, there is so much misunderstanding. And then something goes wrong in life, we start saying that, why Krishna is doing this to me? We say like this. Because I have come to Krishna with a business attitude. I'll do all this for you. You do this for me. How this will work? That's not Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is not saying that. Bhagavad Gita is a science. It's telling us that death is there. It's a reality of life. But before that death happens, try to understand this, how that process works. Process is like this. You are busy in construction so many lifetimes, building so many buildings you have built. And now also you are building your next building, you are preparing it. But At the moment you are busy with this building as well as the next building you are going to build to live, the next building. This is what's going on at the moment. But if you want to stop this construction business, first thing is Krishna is saying, Jara marana mokshaya mama ashrita yatandiye te brahma tadvidhu krishnam adhyalmam karmacha agilam. He says, adhyalmam karmacha agilam. We'll come to that verse. So you will notice there, then Krishna has put a very big introduction to the 8th chapter in that verse. That is the, probably it is the last verse or one but last. Last but one, I think, isn't it? Yeah. Last but one verse in the 7th chapter. So that is how Krishna is taking us to the 8th chapter. To the 8th chapter. So, let's have a look at that verse. Because, yeah. Intelligent persons, I'll read a translation. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental and fruitive activities. Now, to be honest with you, that translation, what has been given there, is cannot carry that message involved in that two lines of the of that verse. Te Brahma Tad Vidu Krishnam Adhyatmam Karma Chagilam. But that is all you can do in English. You can't do anything more than that. Prabhupada has done the best possible thing, it has been translated. But if you understand the spirit of that verse, what it message is carried by that verse, you will really see how deep that verse is indicating us, indicating to. Prabhupada, I mean, yes, and literally you can see. Now, somebody reads this. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental and fruitive activities. What do we understand by that? How would you explain that if somebody asks you that? Te Brahma Tadvidu Krishnam Adhyatmam Karma Jagilam. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental and fruitive activities, it says. So there are so many places in the Bhagavad Gita like this, which is not anybody's fault. That is due to the the depth of the science of Bhagavad Gita. That is what it is. And it is difficult to explain that in a translation or in a purport. And it is a matter of, because you have to remember, Bhagavad Gita is knowledge of the Upanishads, isn't it? Upanishads knowledge, Krishna has brought it and summarized and packaged it and given it to us in this way. And therefore, that Upanishad's background is a critical factor in the Bhagavad Gita. So many things which are not, which Krishna didn't explain to Arjuna. Obviously, Krishna expected Arjuna to know this. What is Adhyalpam? What is Adhidevam? What is Adhiyatyam? All these kind of things. Yeah. So, here, in this chapter, you will see that Janamarana Mokshaya Mamashrite Edandiye Te Brahma Tadvidu Krishnam Adhyatmam Karma Chagilam, he mentions, and that was the translation. And in response, ultimately, Krishna says there, Sadhi Bhudhadi Devam Mam, Sadhi Yanjaye Vidu, Prayana Kale Bijamam, Te Vidur Yukta Chedasa. Krishna closed that chapter there, the 7th chapter. What did he say? He says, those who know me as the Supreme Lord, as the governing principle of the material manifestation, who knows me as the one underlying all the demigods and as the one who sustaining all sacrifices can, with steadfast mind, understand and know me even at the time of death. Now, if you read that translation, you will think, Krishna is saying, those who know me as the Supreme Lord. Yes, we all know you as the Supreme Lord. Then, as the governing principle of the material manifestation. Yes, we accept that you are the governing principle. And who know me as the one underlying all the demigods. Yes, we accept that also. And as the one sustaining all sacrifices, yes, Shastra is saying that also. And with steadfast mind, understand and know me even at the time of death. So, know me even at the time of death. So, if you know all these things, there should be no problem, isn't it? At the time of death, everything should be just straightforward. But it's not so straightforward. Because it's not so straightforward, that is why this 8th chapter has come about. So, these two verses, Janamrana Mokshaya Mamashrite Edandiye Te Brahma Tadvidu Krishnam Adhyalpam Karma Chagilam and this Sadhibhudadi Devamam Sadhiyanjaye Vidu Prayana Kale Bijamam Te Vidur Yukta Chedasa. This is the introduction to the 8th chapter. Everything in the Bhagavad Gita is a flow of a knowledge in a very systematic way. It's flowing from 2nd chapter to the 18th chapter, which you will see when you keep studying that. So, these two verses Krishna has told Arjuna, and that confused Arjuna, obviously. And that is why Arjuna sat there in the chariot and says to Krishna, "You put me in a very awkward state," he says to Krishna. "You put in two verses so many things you said, and I don't get anything, head and tail of what you are saying." That's why he says, "Kim tad brahmam, kim adhyatmam, kim karmam." What is this adhyatmam means? What is this brahmam means? What is this karmam means? And then he says, what is adhibhudam means? What is adhidevam means? What does it all mean? Arjuna asked this question to Krishna. Now, Arjuna's case, it's not a problem because Krishna is there to tell him what is to be. Krishna can create that understanding in Arjuna's mind, is it not? But these questions Arjuna has asked on our behalf, because Vedavyasa Maharshi knew that the way Krishna has spoken to Arjuna in the battlefield will not be easier for everybody. There Arjuna had the understanding, and plus Krishna is there talking to him. So the 7th chapter is called Jnana Vijnana Yogam. And there Krishna completed that chapter that by talking about Mumuchu. Mumuchu means, you can say, Jaramarana Mokshaya Mamashrite Dandiye. He is called Mumuchu. Mumuchu means one who wants to escape. That is called Mumukshu. Escape from what? Escape from the cycle of birth and death. He is called Mumukshu. That's a technical word for that. So in that chapter, Krishna talk about Mumukshu. Mumukshu, that is what the word used there, Mumukshatvam. Mumukshatvam. Mumukshu means, what does Mumukshu means? One who wants freedom, he is called Mumukshu. One who wants freedom. At the moment, we don't have any freedom. We may think we have freedom. That is our foolishness. We don't have any freedom. What freedom have we got? We are doing all these things in life, and as soon as we leave the body, we get into the next body. And that body is not based on our desire, but is based on the karma, what we do here. So where is the freedom? There is no freedom in anything. It is only an illusion in our mind that we have a lot of freedom. We have no freedom. When death will come, we have no freedom. Based on our prarabdham, or when the karma is exhausted for which this body has been given, then we have to leave this body. There is no freedom there. And the next body, what we have created now, we don't know about it, but we will get it. It will be handed over to us in a plate as soon as we leave this body. So where is the freedom? Neither in leaving this body we have no freedom, nor in getting the next body we have any freedom. With all our planning, it is not going to work the way we wanted. Because we don't know about karma, how karma will generate the next body. That is the problem. That is the problem. How karma will generate the next body, that we don't know. And if you tell someone about liberation now, you will get frightened. You will get frightened because, we don't know what liberation means. That's why. I don't want to lose my body now. Somebody tells me, that's what I will say first thing. So we can say, instead of saying liberation, we will use the word freedom. Freedom is the better word. Because everybody wants that freedom to decide what should happen. Would like to have it, but can't have it easily, isn't it? Because in reality, actual freedom is not... is not desire having the freedom to decide what body you should have next. That's not the freedom. That's not the real freedom. Real freedom is freedom from the body itself. Freedom from the body. Freedom from the mind. Freedom from the intelligence. This is called actually freedom. So, when you say freedom from the body, for example, what will you say? we will take it like this. What can I have with keeping this body together? Now, when I say I am within this body, I will think like this. Suppose you give me freedom. The condition I have is that I must be able to keep this body and I should have freedom. Krishna is putting to us in a different way. He is saying there, Janmam Mrityu Jara Vyadhi. Krishna says here, isn't it? Later on in the 13th or 14th chapter also, Krishna is saying there, Janmam Mrityu Jara Vyadhi. Birth, death, old age and disease. Four things Krishna talks about it there. In this chapter, 7th chapter, Krishna says, Jara Maranam Mokshaya. Mamashrita Yatandiye. So, in the conclusion of that 7 chapters, so keeping this understanding that freedom means, or liberation in other words called freedom means, when you escape from the old age and death, when you escape from the birth, death, old age and disease, that is what is called freedom. Not keeping this body as it is and asking for freedom, Krishna says that is meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. If you want to keep this body and you are asking for freedom, Krishna says it's not possible. So in two places in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th chapter, Krishna is saying, Jara Maranam Moksham. Moksham means freedom. That freedom from old age and death, number one. Later on, Krishna says, Janmam Mrityu Jara Vyadhi. Birth, death, old age and disease. Same thing. Here only he mentioned old age and death. There he talks about birth and disease also. Two more things he has added to that. So there are four things and two of them are these two things. Jaran Maranam. Jaran Maranam, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi. All of them together. Krishna is saying, if you are able to escape from all these things, that is freedom. That is how Krishna is defining freedom. Krishna's freedom is when you have got out of all these things. That is the real freedom. Not staying within this, the external freedom, what we are looking for in this world, is not what Krishna means. External freedom, you know what it means. For example, at 5 o'clock we will finish this class. And then you have the freedom to go, is it not? That is one kind of freedom. That's not the freedom Krishna is talking about. So that is the external things, external things. So that is a freedom on the external side. But if you don't get the freedom inside, Krishna says it's not freedom. Real freedom, as far as Krishna, inside we are still slaves. Slaves of these things. What? Birth, death, old age and disease. We are still the slaves of that. So, in Krishna's point of view, that proper freedom is when you have freedom inside, not outside. Outside freedom is not taken very seriously. Because Krishna says here, you are still slave inside and you cannot be free from that. You cannot be free from that. So, therefore, you have to ask this question, why did Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita? In order to teach us about this freedom inside, not about the freedom outside. Krishna has no interest in that. That freedom outside is not important, freedom inside is important. That is why Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita was spoken for this reason, to get that freedom inside. And that is why all the great acharyas wrote their commentaries on Bhagavad Gita for the freedom from inside. For the freedom inside. Because this Bhagavad Gita is not a cultural activity. Many people are thinking that like that. It's a cultural activity. Oh, we'll arrange some Bhagavad Gita program, like a cultural activity, get a lot of people together and then make some children to learn some verses and they will sing like a parrot, they will sing those verses. And I'm not saying it's all wrong, but that's not good enough. That's the point. If this freedom, if you didn't get from Bhagavad Gita, then you haven't utilized Bhagavad Gita properly. That's what it means. If you have not escaped from these four things and you have not got that freedom from these four, then you have not succeeded in using Bhagavad Gita properly in life. That's the principle what Krishna is talking about. So, those things like we do, for example, Gita Jayanti, we get all the people together, sit together and chant from beginning to end, read the translation, purport, everything, whatever, and then have a big feast and go home. That's fine. That's alright. In that lower level, that's fine. That's okay. There's nothing wrong in that. But that is in that level, you have to understand that. It's not going to take you very far. It will stay like that. Once a year, meet together, read it from beginning to end. And distribute a lot of Bhagavad Gita to sponsor others, and 5 copies, 10 copies. So that's all nice. It's nothing wrong in that. But that is in a very, very lower basic level that is happening. If ever you see that, Bhagavad Gita did not, Krishna didn't give it to us to come in once a year to read it out from beginning to end and go home after that. After big feast, how we have all been first class devotees, pure devotees, we are all now. We read Bhagavad Gita from beginning to end and go home totally satisfied. That's useless. Useless in the sense that that's not what is expected of us, in other words. Krishna is expecting a little more than that from us. He is giving us a very, very serious thing, message to us about death. What does freedom mean? And we don't take any of those things seriously, and we give our own spin on that, saying that this is how we understand Krishna, your Bhagavad Gita is, and start doing things like that. What can Krishna do about it? That's our foolishness, isn't it? Krishna is telling us this whole Bhagavad Gita is such a precise science of life in this world. What we have got, this material body, what is going to happen to this body. The whole subtlety of this whole Bhagavad Gita is so important that it is difficult to ignore that. So this Adhyatma Vidya, or spiritual science, in other words, what does Bhagavad Gita is doing to us is that the real freedom Bhagavad Gita wants us to have, the proper freedom, the real freedom, he wants us to enjoy that. And it is for that purpose Bhagavad Gita was spoken. And all satsangam is meant for that purpose. Satsangam is meant for that purpose. Not only for a few minutes of meditation or thoughts about spiritual life. No. Ultimately, or people will think that sometimes that let me try it out for a while, Bhagavad Gita, what Bhagavad Gita says. If you all take Bhagavad Gita with that approach, nothing will happen. Nothing will happen. Sometimes people go to hear Bhagavad Gita, and when they go to Bhagavad Gita also, they don't understand what they are want from Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is offering us some of the greatest thing what you cannot get anywhere else, isn't it? So with that seriousness, if you are not able to approach Bhagavad Gita, then it is a problem. It's a serious problem as well. And that is why you won't get many customers for Bhagavad Gita. They will buy the book and all. But if you want somebody who is genuinely serious about hearing about what Krishna has spoken, it will be very few, always. It is like that. So, so here, Krishna says here, like nowadays, you can see many people after retirement, they think, oh, let me listen to Bhagavad Gita a little bit. That is also, after retirement, they think like that. So, because to understand. But Bhagavad Gita's message is so profound and so important in life. Without that message, properly going inside, spiritual life is not possible. It's not possible because it is so, the depth of the message is so deep. And just like we see here, that without this understanding, without that goal is not there, if you get into just like you're driving a car without knowing where you want to go, it will be similar situations. You'll be driving here, there, everywhere. Same thing. Ultimately, when the fuel runs out, you'll stop the car, isn't it? The same situation will happen in our life also. So, and such people, they have done a lot of things and ultimately they left this world without any deeper understanding what Krishna has spoken. So, the first thing Krishna is saying there is that there should be a goal in life. There should be a goal in life. So, in order that the goal to have in a person's life, he should have sufficient ability or thought power inside. Power to think properly. To develop that thought power inside. Not follow like a sheep everything. Everything follow like a sheep. Because Bhagavad Gita is so interesting for those who are serious about it. Those who are not serious about it, it will be boring also. Because Vichara Shakti means able to accept what Krishna is saying and that seriousness inside to understand what Krishna is saying. That is the most important thing. So that thought power, thinking power is necessary inside. Only then that goal will get firmed up inside. If one develops that thought power inside, that they should think about it. Thinking is not a wrong thing. We have to think about it and understand what Krishna is saying, because through that process, the goal will become firmly established inside. Whereas many people, they think that, oh, we just have to go and sit there and then we will go home and we'll come back again next time and listen again. That will go on like this. But that is not what Krishna is saying here. Krishna is saying that the goal is important, because if you don't know the goal, why am I studying Bhagavad Gita? For what purpose am I taking Bhagavad Gita seriously? So only if it is there, that thought power has developed inside, it will have its effect very fast. It will have its very effect very fast. Otherwise, even if 100 years I sit here and keep talking about Bhagavad Gita, and if you keep on hearing that, if you are not thinking about it, then your goal will not be your important thing. You may catch up something here and there, but the goal will not be the important factor. Goal will not be the important factor. So, till you yourself start analyzing this Bhagavad Gita, you yourself start analyzing this Bhagavad Gita. If that does not happen, this will remain only as an entertainment. This will remain only as an entertainment. Nothing more than that. It is very unfortunate that many times people just do not take it seriously. That's a very difficult thing when they do not take Bhagavad Gita very seriously. Because they are got habituated to this, that, well, I will listen whatever we are talking about. It is not going deeper than that. How will it go deeper? Till you start reading and thinking about it. Thinking is an important aspect of that. It cannot be written off also. And that is why Krishna is saying that these chapters from now on, it does generate a lot of thoughts inside, questions, thoughts. And that means it requires a lot of contemplation also. We have to start thinking the way Krishna has presented to us. At the moment, in our conditioned way, we think in one direction. But here is a science. Bhagavad Gita is a science of the soul, science of the soul it is. And to capture that message, we have to start relating with Bhagavad Gita in some way. Some connection has to happen there. So, otherwise what will happen is you will hear Bhagavad Gita and you will say that, oh, it was a nice class, and give me a compliment and you will go. And that's no use to me or use to you either. That's not what is expected from the... So, Krishna is saying here, Jaramarana Mokshaya, in the last chapter, he started with that, isn't it? Jaramarana Mokshaya. So, very interesting how Krishna begins. Jaramarana Mokshaya, he says, if you want freedom from death, that's how he introduces to us. Now, nobody likes to talk about death, isn't it? You will see this. No, everywhere in the world it is like that. As soon as you talk about death, people don't like it. They just don't like it. They say, we don't talk about such things, they say. I don't know why it is like that, but it is like that in this world. When you bring up the matter, or somebody died, we talk about that. Well, something must have happened to him, but we don't die. He only dies, we don't die. Or some wrong conclusion we have caught in our understanding. We don't want to discuss about that. And because even great poets and literature who write big literature, they also never begins with death as in their beginning, because it's considered to be inauspicious to talk about death. Whereas Krishna enjoys talking about death more than anything else. He begins everything with death. Everything related to Krishna begins with death. Parikshit Maharaj begins with death. Isn't it? Here, again, war going on. Millions get slaughtered. And again, death is what he wants to discuss. You start thinking, what is the Supreme Personality of God? And he hasn't got anything else to do except to talk about death. This is how we see. And therefore, what happens? We, based on our mind and mood, we say, we'll pick those parts of Bhagavatam which is very nice to read. Rukmini got married to Krishna. Everybody likes it. Beautiful part. Such a nice feast. Everybody came. All friends, relations, everybody came. Likes to read that, isn't it? Krishna's marriage to Rukmini. People love that. And why? Because marriage everybody likes. Everybody likes to talk about the marriage, organizing marriage, attending marriages. This is our daily business in this world, isn't it? We have lived through this whole life. So we find happiness in all that things. And similarly, in Bhagavatam also when we read, as soon as the important topic we bring about, they don't want that. No, 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 this death and all, we don't discuss such things. That's all for others, whoever wants to discuss. We've got not much more nice things in the Bhagavatam. Krishna married Rukmini, and then Krishna married Jambavati. Krishna married so many wives. He had a wonderful householder life. And even though we are not living like Krishna in such a nice way, but it's in a small level, we are also having a nice householder life, feeling happiness in that way. So this will not help in understanding Bhagavad Gita. They are there in Bhagavatam and all because we are so dull in our heads that to get this message of the soul, we require all that things. Vedavyasa has incorporated so many things there in the Bhagavatam. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking, Jaramarana Mokshaya Mama Shrate Yatandiye, he says. If you have that goal in your life, in your mind, then you can hear this 8th chapter. That is the message. If you have that goal in your mind that you want to free yourself from the old age and death, if that is your intention, if that's your goal in life, then listen to this 8th chapter. That is why Krishna takes us to the 8th chapter. So, therefore you will see this all the time happening, that we people, in this concept in life that something is auspicious, something is inauspicious, isn't it? Marriage is considered to be auspicious. Death is considered to be inauspicious, isn't it? This is mundane. This has nothing to do with spirituality. But it has permeated into spirituality and we started thinking that, oh, if I go for all the marriages and attend all the marriages, oh, it's very auspicious. I've done my bath. It's a spiritual occasion. So the temples also says get everybody married in the temple and make it very auspicious in the temple. It's like a wedding factory, as they call it. It runs like this all the time. It's nothing to do with spirituality. Because we are like that, that's what we want. We don't want the Bhagavad Gita. We want all these things. Therefore, we make it like that. And we think that we are all very spiritual. But spirituality is something different than all that things. If we don't take Krishna's message seriously, we are not spiritual. And the message is more important. That's why that Krishna is saying here that all the problems gets resolved when you free yourself from the death. That is the fundamental message in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you look, that is the important point. So all prasnam, all problems gets resolved when Parikshit was given Brahmavadesham, isn't it? If you look in the 12th canto, the 5th chapter is Brahmavadesham. What is a Brahmavadesham means? Brahmavadesham is this. What did Shuka Brahmashi says to Parikshit? Shuka says to Parikshit, Parikshit, there is no such thing called death. There is no such thing called death. And you are different from that body. That message, Sukadeva Goswami managed to get it into Parikshit's head. Parikshit got it. That's what happened in that 5th chapter, in the 12th canto. Aham Brahma Param Dhamma Brahma Aham Paramam Padam Evan Samikshanyadhaya Aham Brahma Param Dhamma Brahma Aham Paramam Padam. I am Brahmam, Aham Brahmasmi. That stage has happened to him, to Parikshit at that point. So, and that is the point when he escaped from death, isn't it? Parikshit escaped from death at that point. That is the point. Up to that point, Parikshit was thinking death is coming. Takshaka is on his way to bite him. The curse happened in the first canto when Parikshit was cursed by the boy, Brahmana boy Sringi, that in 7 days time from now, he will be bitten by Takshaka and he will die. From that point onwards, He has been sitting there listening to Sukadeva Goswami, Srimad Bhagavatam, thinking that I am going to die in a few days. 7 days time, 6 days time, 5 days time, 4 days time. Like that. It's coming to an end. He's going to die now. Tatchaka is already on his way. He was standing there. Sukadeva Goswami, in that 12th canto, in the 5th chapter, that chapter is called Brahmavadesham. Brahmavadesham means, by that Upadesham or by that instructions, Parikshit got released from the misconception about death. Jnanam has gone inside. Same Jnanam what we are discussing. Just like in the Sushupti state we mentioned this. How in the deep sleep state you realized that when I gave up my body, mind, intelligence and ego, in my pure state of consciousness, I was in the happy position, in the deep sleep. That same experience, Sukadeva Goswami brought it to Parikshit in the vacant state. That's what happened there. In that 12th canto, 5th chapter, that's what happens there. The same experience in the Sushupti state, that knowledge, Parikshit experienced that in the vacant state, in the 12th canto, 5th chapter. That is what is called Brahmavadesham. Brahmavadesham is that. How to get that in the vacant state. And that is the mercy of the spiritual master. Like in that case, Sukadeva Goswami, what he did to Parikshit at that time. The evam samikshanyadhaya atmanyadhaya nishkale. It says there in that Bhagavatam. Atmanyadhaya nishkale. In other words, he realized that I am Atma. I am not this body. That realization happened to him at that time. So beginning with the fear of death, Bhagavatam. And at the end, Parikshit leaving the body without any fear with full knowledge. This is what we see in the Bhagavatam. So, concept that death is inauspicious and marriage is auspicious, this is all our concept. This has nothing to do with spiritual life. So, the beginning itself, Krishna is saying, Jaramirana Mokshaya Mamashrite Yatandiye. How one should endeavor in spiritual life. That's what he is saying. First thing he says here, completely taking my shelter. Without that, you cannot have spiritual life. Taking shelter of Krishna is the most important thing. Without that, you cannot have spiritual life. Jaramarana mokshaya mama ashrite yatandiye. Krishna says there. So, Krishna says, taking my shelter, continue your effort. That's how it should be. Taking Krishna's shelter, continue your effort. And those people who are doing like that, they are given the title Mumukshu. Mumukshu means is that people. Taking Krishna's shelter, who are endeavoring for freedom from death, who are endeavoring for self-realization, or who are engaged in spiritual life. Taking Krishna's shelter, engaged in spiritual life, they are called Mumukshu. They are called Mumukshu. That is what that word coming from. Moksham, from that word comes mumukshatvam. Well, it comes from jaramarana mokshaya mamashrite randiye. So in those two lines, Krishna is saying there that those who are taking my shelter and engaging in spiritual activity in sadhana, with the completely taking my shelter, they are called mumukshu. we can see this ourselves in our own life in this world. Keep a mirror in front of us and look at it and see in which state are we. In which state are we? Are we ready for that? And if you are not ready for this, what Krishna is talking about, this knowledge of mokshatvam and freedom from the cycle of birth and death, if you are not ready for that, then we can live in this world like anybody else. Krishna is not saying you have to leave this world or anything. He says you stay here and do what you like. I have no problem with that. That's how Krishna is. It's never put any... So, but what the problem then is, if we take that approach, well, this Bhagavad Gita is too much for me, so let me do my own way. I live in this world and whatever I get it, I'll take it in that way. It's a little troublesome. The reason is, then Krishna has to put us through a lot of difficulties to bring us to that point. If intelligence is to accept that, then Krishna is speaking this. It's such an important message, this Bhagavad Gita. And if our mind and intelligence is not in tune with that, and we start thinking that, oh, this is too much for me, I don't want to get involved in that. Let me live my life in this world somehow, manage it. And whatever happens, I'll take it. Then Krishna says, I have no problem with that. But Krishna has to do something then to bring us to that point. That is Krishna's way. Krishna is saying that, well, then you have to go through some experiences in this world before you come to that point of realization. So then what Krishna does is, he'll give us a lot of distress and prepare ourselves, mature ourselves for that. And just like in the olden days, if you remember, that the blacksmith used to, when he has to work with the iron, what he has to do, he has to put it into the fire and make it red hot, and then he will suddenly dip it into the water, and then on the anvil he puts it and start smashing it to take the shape whatever he wants to create from that. Isn't it? In the olden days, like when today we have these big furnaces and everything, where iron can be transformed into molten liquid like thing, and they can foundry, they make the casting whichever they wanted. But in the olden days, we didn't have these huge furnaces like now. So the blacksmith used to do in that way. So similarly, what will the nature do? Nature will keep putting us through a lot of trouble like that. And how it does is, he will give you some happiness, and then he'll give you a lot of distress, and then suddenly he'll give you a little happiness. And he will keep on doing this again and again, and one day you will get fed up with both the happiness. But that may take some time. That's the way Maya works. Maya's way of doing things are like that. On the one hand, she will give you a lot of distress. Suddenly, she'll put a chocolate in your mouth and say, taste this chocolate, it's very nice. You will see. Ah. Then, as soon as you get the chocolate, you will say, well, I can tolerate all this distress for a while. It's not a problem. Live with that. This way, Maya does with us. Maya makes us think like that. So, Manikyavachakar mentions this. He says, he has beaten me and beaten me and beaten me to such an extent, and made me to eat everything in this world, all the miseries of this world. And why? Because he done this to make me matured. Otherwise, I would not have come to this stage otherwise, he says. Because to come to that stage is not easy to come to that. I can keep saying this, Janamarana Moshaya Mamashrate Dandiye. But in our own inside, that change to happen is very, very difficult. So to receive that higher wisdom, which will completely release us, which will not give us anything fascinating in this world. That is the difficulty here. That everything else in this world is fascinating in different ways, isn't it? But this release will not be very fascinating for us, because we are not getting anything from this world. Our mind is so absorbed in the world outside. So, in the world outside, external world, what is important for us is our money is important, wealth is important, our fame, how famous you are, how much power you have, and your vanity, all these things are important in this world, isn't it? In the world outside, all this is important. But Krishna is saying here, these things will not give you adhyatmam. That is what in that verse, Jaramarana Mokshaya Mamashrita Yadandiye. Te Brahma Tadvidu Krishnam Adhyatmam Karmachaghilam. Adhyatmam means all these things are all useless. Krishna is saying they will give you some position in the world outside. Fame, followers, money, beauty, all kinds of other things. You may get some recognition in this world. But once you come to spiritual life, they are all useless. Absolutely useless. They won't give you anything substantially from that you can get in your spiritual life. That's what he is mentioning here, adhyatmam. That adhyatmam word is referring to that. Adhyatmam means, what will adhyatmam give you? Adhyatmam means spiritual life. What will spiritual life will give you? Spiritual life will give you, it will give you peace inside, shanti. Shanti is what is on offer, and perfection inside, and those personalities who have got that vichara shakti, thought power inside, Vedam is telling us, they are called dhira. That means those who have managed to find the beauty of the peace inside a person, the life, and able to see the vanity and the fruitlessness of all the things, recognition in this world and other external things, and able to come out of that, and start recognizing this peace as more important inside, and if he is going in that direction, and if his thought power is working in that way, Vedam calls him as Dhira. He is the one who is called Dhira. Dhira means he has got the right understanding, right intelligence, and he is working in the right direction. That is why it is spoken like that. Dhiraha. Dhi means intelligence, buddhi, intelligence. And one who absorbed in intelligence, jnanam, he is called Dhira. The word Dhira is like that. Dhi means intelligence. Dhira means one who is absorbed in the intellectual level, trying to understand the understand the beauty of Bhagavad Gita, understand the Bhagavad Gita properly. In other words, that's what. Such people who are engaging in that direction, they will have that vichara shakti. The shakti means ability to think and analyze things properly. Analyze things properly. We have a long way to go. There's no doubt about that. We have a long way to go because we are not taking Bhagavad Gita seriously. We are not taking Bhagavatam seriously. The right respect and the seriousness what Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam requires, we don't have it. That's a known thing. And we, on the other hand, we have a lot of misunderstanding about many things about Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Both of them have come from the greatest personalities, Sudeva Goswami and Krishna. Isn't it? Bhagavad Gita has come from Krishna and Srimad Bhagavatam has come from Sudeva Goswami. And not knowing their greatness, not knowing their realizations or their the subtlety of their words, we are simply making it as a normal literature. And we have not known, even learned how to respect this literature, Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. So anyway, Krishna is saying here that only this recognition will come of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam only if this thought process builds up inside a person. Vichara Shakti, in other words. So, such people who don't value anything in this world, that means power, position, money, fame, popularity and things like that, those who don't value them anymore, but those who value the peace inside, Shanti, perfection inside, Purnada, all the words in the Shastram is like that. Anandam, Brahmanam, those who value them, only they will develop that thought power. Only they can develop that thought power. Because if your mind is all busy with the recognition in the world, how can you develop spiritual life? That's not possible. It'll never be possible. It will simply remain as a show. It's not going to go anywhere. If you want the recognition of this world, what does this world mean at the end? So that understanding at least must come to us before you start studying this 8th chapter, Krishna is saying. Because it's so important that our interest in at the moment is in the world. A lot it is in the world. Our name, our fame, money, followers, recognition and whatnot, everything. Everything is world-oriented. Nothing is centered around the soul and the Shanti, Purnada, perfection. What Krishna refers to in the Bhagavad Gita as perfection of life, insight. That inside quality, none of them is there. What to do? So that's why only when that happens, Krishna is saying that thought power will develop inside. What is that thought power? Thought power is this, that he is able to say very clearly to himself that none of these things outside is important for me. I am concerned about my own spiritual realization inside. When that happens, natural way, Krishna says, your Shraddha will build up, Vichara Shakti, the thought power will build up. And those people who are absorbed in that way, Krishna says he is Dhira. So introducing that chapter, Krishna is saying here that those who have sitting in the body, while sitting in this body, if I start realizing that old age is coming, disease is coming, death is coming. And I want to escape from this. What should I do for that? This question will only come to those people. Otherwise, they won't think about it. See, our spiritual life today is based on what? It's based on the understanding that Prabhupada came here. Prabhupada opened so many centers, distributed a lot of books. And we all together sit and chant and go on like this. That's fine. That's okay. But when it comes to Shastram, it's a little bit more serious than that. Shastram is telling us that Krishna is telling us very openly that if you have started seeing this problem of life, of this body, that death is coming, old age is coming, disease is coming, and I have to go through this, and as soon as I leave this body, another body is waiting there for me, next building, what I have created, and nothing is working, I cannot maintain this building either, this building will collapse one day, next building is also going to collapse another day, and the building after that will also collapse another day. One who is thinking all these things all the time, and these problems are coming one after the other, I want to escape from this. Krishna is saying, those who want to escape from all these things, he is Adhyatmam. Only then he is Adhyatma. Otherwise, he is not Adhyatmam. At the moment, what happened? People are busy building societies, communities, and all sorts of things in the name of spiritual life. That's all fine. In that level, it's okay if that's what you want in life. And social life, and it expands like that, isn't it? Like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that Maya is like this, that you start one project, that will give you inspiration for starting hundreds of projects from that. And that from each hundreds of those projects, another hundreds of projects will come out. So like this, your projects will keep on expanding and whole life you will get absorbed in that. But in Bhagavad Gita, there is only one message. Jaramarana mokshaya mamashrita yatandiye te brahma tadvidu krishnam adhyatmam karma cha akhilam. Krishna put the very clear words, the foundation for the next chapter. So that is how this 8th chapter is going to start, and we'll have it that after 15 minutes or so. So, Jaramarana Moksha, 7th chapter again at the end, the last two verses. Jaramarana Mokshaya Mama Ashrite Yatandiye Te Brahma Tadvidu Krishnam Adhyatmam Karmachakhilam. We have seen that verse, what Krishna is saying there. And in the next verse, you can see Sadhi Buddhadi Devam Mam Sadhi Yatnyanjaye Vidu Prayana Kale Pichamam Te Vidur Yukta Chetasa. One who knows me as Adibhudam, Adidevam, Adiyatnyam, and he will know me, and he has Prayana Kale Bijamam Tevidur Yukta Chetasa. That at the time, Prayana Kala means time of death. He will know me properly. That's what he's saying. He'll know me. But, the commentary is Sadibhuda Adidevam, Adibhudam cha, Adidevam cha, Adibhuda Adidevam, Saha Adibhuda Adidevena Vartade, Idi Sadibhuda Adidevam cha. Mam ye vidhu sadhi yatnyam cha saha adiyatnyena sadhi yatnyam cha ye vidhu prayana kale abhicha marana kale abhichamam te vidhu yukta chetasaha samahi chitaha iti. So in all these three levels, adhibhudam, adhidevam, adiyatnyam, one who knows me, and they will at the time of death also with the full mind, they will come back to me with a full understanding. They will know me at the time of death. When we go through this 8th chapter, as I mentioned before, that so many misconceptions about death will go. When we pick up certain verses in this chapter, that's where it comes. Like we'll see, we understood that somehow at the time of death, if I remember Krishna, I will escape. This is a very known concept. Every devotee knows that, isn't it? They are sincere. They are serious about that to some extent. That's why they are saying that. They accept that the andhagaleja mameva smaran tektua kalebaram ya prayadi samadbhavam yadi nastyatra samshaya. Krishna says that in that verse. But the difficulty is that how does that happen? Isn't it? That question always comes. That means that at the time of death, I'll just remember Krishna like the way I have seen in the Gokulananda's form or Lendanishwara's form. If I just think that form, what I have seen there at the temples, and if I start remembering this and I leave this body, first of all, I don't know when I'll be leaving my body, number one. While I'm leaving this body, I don't know what will be happening to me. Because all different parts of the body will be pulling in different directions, isn't it? Here everything will be like Kulashekhar Alvar says here, that പ്രാണപ്രയാണ സമയേ കഫം വാതം പിത്തം ഓൾ ദ ത്രീ തിങ്സ് കണ്ഠാവരോധന വിധൗ സ്മരണം കുതസ്തേ ഇറ്റ് വിൽ കം ആൻഡ് ബ്ലോക്ക് ഹിയർ ആൻഡ് ഡോക്ടേഴ്സ് ആൻഡ് നേഴ്സസ് വിൽ ബി ബിസി ദെയർ അറ്റ് ദാറ്റ് ടൈം ദാറ്റ് ഹൗ ടു ഗെറ്റ് യു ത്രൂ ദാറ്റ് ഡിഫിക്കൽട്ട് ടൈം സം ഹൗ ദാറ്റ്സ് വാട്ട് ദേ വിൽ ട്രൈ ടു ഡു ദ ആർ നോട്ട് ബോദേഡ് വെതർ യു ഗോയിങ് ടു ഗോ സ്പിരിച്വൽ വേൾഡ് ഓർ ടു ദി യമരാജസ് പ്ലേസ് യു ആർ നോട്ട് കൺസേൺഡ് അബൌട്ട് ദാറ്റ് സോ ഇൻ ദാറ്റ് സിറ്റുവേഷൻ You may understand these words. How does it practically happen to us? This question always there. It's easy to say, oh, at the time of death, as though death is something like moving from one room to another room. It's not that simple, is it? The death. That time so many things happen. Your very self is going through a lot of experiences at that time, the time of death. So when we read those verses, you also have to bring back this understanding into life that death is not a something what we have experienced in this life. It's first time you're going to experience now. And we don't know what that state will be at that time when that happens, isn't it? Andhakaleja mameva smarantek. The verse is simple. Smarantektua kalayabaram yaprayadisam adbhavam yadinastyatra samshaya. That's all it says. Krishna says, I can guarantee you that if at the time of death, if you think of me and leave your body, you'll come back to me. That's all it means. But when we finish this chapter, you will know what Krishna is saying is something different than what you have understood so far about it. At the moment, we have all understood in this way, isn't it? I was also like that before. I used to understand in this way. So somehow at the time of death, if I can remember Krishna and leave the body, everything is fine. But it's not that simple as we think about it, because when you pick one verse from the Bhagavad Gita and start reading it and taking the translation, literally translation of that verse as everything, then this problem happens. The whole 8th chapter is together. All other verses in the 8th chapter has something to contribute to this concept of leaving the body. Yeah, so many verses there, and you will understand that when you completely study this 8th chapter, you will realize it, that it is not that process what we thought it is, but it's something different than that. We should come to that later. So we were discussing this before the break, that one who thinks, why this old age is coming, death is coming, disease is coming, and I want to escape from this, what should I do for that? If this question is coming, it will only come to those people who have started thinking. Those who are not thinking, this question will never happen to them. It has happened in the history to many people. Buddha got the same thing, isn't it? This is what happened to Buddha. What happened to Buddha? Buddha, same thing happened to him. And who else had happened? Buddha thought about this, and what did happen? And Buddha's father arranged, Suddhodana, he arranged everything so that seeing this Buddha's way of thinking, father wasn't very happy about it. He arranged 3 palaces for him to stay, one for the summer, one for the winter, one for the rainy season. Suddhodana palaces, got him married so that let him live happily in the family life, thinking all that. But Buddha kept him away from all the distress of this world, the father. And one day he was traveling in a chariot. He told one of his charioteers to take the chariot and take Buddha in a chariot to see the world. So Buddha was traveling in the world outside. He saw somewhere an old person, very old man, struggling to walk and holding a stick in the hand, and in a great distress he was moving around. Buddha started thinking, will this happen to me? He asked the charioteer. He said, yes, it happens to everybody, he said. So that's opened Buddha's eyes. Then he took further and he saw somebody lying on the road, very sick, ready to die. So seeing his sickness and suffering like that, Buddha says to him, does this happen to everybody? The charioteer said, yes. So like this, Buddha directly saw people dying, people getting sick, and people suffering in this world with various diseases and all that. Buddha started saying that if this all can happen to me, why should I continue with this? And that is why janma jana maranam na bhaved, famous verses from Buddha. If you tell me that all these things won't happen, he says to his father, I'm happy to take over your position. and run the administration of the kingdom. I have no problem, he said. But this is all waiting there for me. Yadi ishtaviyogam na bhaved. If people are not going, and so-called my family members who are around me, they are all going to go one day. So what is the happiness you are talking about? So Buddha's thought power developed in that way, and he asked the same question. That if this is what's on offer, I'm not interested, he said. So this is how intelligent people will think. This is intelligence to think like this. Who else you see like that? Kathopanishad, Nachiketas, the same questions. Isn't it? Nachiketas went and Nachiketas asked Yama the same question. All Upanishads have got to only tell us this one thing. What will happen at the time of death? What are you going to do about it? That's all the question is. Nachiketas asked the question. And the same question, several great sages have asked the question. And that's why Upanishads came through them. Durvasava Maharshi, Atri, Angiras, Parashurama Maharshi, Jamadagni, and Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu, Bhrigu, Vasishta, Vishwamitra, and endless number of sages. Why they are called sages? Because they have asked the same question. What? We don't ask any of those questions, so therefore there is no problem with us. But they have asked only these questions. They never asked about the economic development or the GDP or things like that. They never asked about those questions. We ask about GDP and things like that. So that is the difference. Those who are thoughtful, those who can think beyond this body and who understand and accept Shastram properly, they will ask this question in a natural way. That's what has happened to them. So this has happened in the historic times, from the Upanishads times, and it's happening even now also. Because once this inquisitiveness comes, Mumukshatvam it is called, no matter who it is, know very well how wealthy you are, and how famous you are, and how great you are, and whatever it may be in this world, suppose you get sick very badly, you get ill, then what will that help you? All your fame and popularity and followers and wealth and all what you have got, what good is it to you? Because that's all related to the body, is it not? So, but you need that fineness inside to think in this way. When we don't have that fineness, we are in a very gross way if we think, we'll think that life is all these things, that name and fame and followers and money and all these kind of things. But when that fineness, that is Brahmanyam. Brahminical quality means this, that to think in that fineness inside, in a finer way, able to see things properly. That is Brahmanyam, Brahminical quality. That's what Krishna is saying here. So all these so-called achievements in this world, it's all waste at the end. That's the first thing. So, as soon as something happens to your body, in a bodily level something goes wrong, all this happiness what you are getting from the body, from other sources, goes away with that. Suppose you had, you will know this in this world how it happens, isn't it? Suppose you had you are a very powerful politician or a famous football player or a film actor or a musician or something. As soon as you get sick and you can't perform anymore, nobody is going to look at you. Nobody wants to know about you. They'll go on to another star. They'll catch hold of another star after that. That's the world. It's like that. You can't blame. That's the nature of the world. But those who can see this and see that everything, achievements in this world is all at the end a waste of time and it's not going to fulfill the life, and therefore, any happiness that is dependent on anything external will never make us happy. That's the principle. Anything, if your happiness is based on anything that is outside you, inside me, but outside you, outside my body, if it is outside, including this body, if it is based on that, it will not give me perfect happiness, perfection in my life. This is the principle of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita wants to stress this point. If my happiness or if my life is based on anything outside me, means outside this body, in the world, centered around anything in this world, name, fame, followers and money and all those kind of things. And even if it is based on this body, Krishna is saying that that is not worthwhile pursuing. And that clarity, in that knowledge, realization is necessary to advance in the path of spiritual life. And when that has happened, it has happened to Buddha, It has happened to Nachiketas. It has happened to all the great sages. And it has happened to many great personalities in the recent times also. And it will always happen to somebody. To somebody it will happen. Those who are very thoughtful, it will happen to them also. So, here, important principle. This is where Vedic philosophy differ from all other religions. All other religions is centered around this one principle. That means, in spiritual life, it is subjective. It's not objective. Spiritual life is subjective. It's not objective. Rishis, the sages, they taught us this one important point first thing. That what is important is the experience in a subjective level, and what you realize is and matures in that state, they gave importance to that. Do you understand what I'm saying? Subjective and objective. Objective means that if it is centered around any object in this world, just like name, fame, followers, money, and all of these things are based on the objects in this world, is it not? Body is also another object. It is. Not me. I'm not this body. I'm different from everything. And if my spiritual life is centered around any of these objects, it is objective. But if my spiritual life is centered around me, the soul, which is the subject, it is subjective. So rishis are telling us, the sages are telling us, if your life is not subjective, then you are wasting your time. This very fundamental fact, they put it in front of us first. Nasado vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sadha. Ubhayorami drishtvandam stanayor tato. That verse will come back again and again and again in Bhagavad Gita to remind us that in all other religions in this world, you can see this in any other religious process if you take, they don't give this importance to subjective. They give it to the objective side of it. If you carefully analyze, you will see. They want to get as many people as possible together, bring them together and worship together. This is how they have developed their spiritual life. Is it not? You can see that. That they likes to increase the number and bring all together and develop in that way. But that will never reach perfection because it's objective. Whereas perfection is only possible if it is subjective. This is the first thing the rishis have taught us. Rishis have told us this one thing. As long as your spiritual life is centered, is objective, it's not going to work. It will only become perfect. Perfection is only possible if it is subjective. So, it is in that way all the Shastram is written. Shastram is prepared in that way. So, they gave importance to this, that somehow you should mature in that way and you should become perfect. They never looked at the world and told us what's happening in the world. It's not importance. From the Vedic point of view, what is happening in the world is not important. You may find this difficult to digest sometimes because we are so used to the world and given importance to the world. Is it not? So, but when you start studying Bhagavad Gita seriously, you will understand how much importance Krishna has given to this world. Krishna is saying here that what is going on in this world, they didn't even look at it. They didn't even want to know about it. So, therefore, if you know, even the great Western Indologists, they call it, isn't it, who study the Vedic philosophy, and the leading one of them was Max Müller. Max Müller was a German philosopher who spent a lot of time in translating a lot of the Upanishads and Vedas into English language. He spent a lot of his time and energy in that way. You know what Max Müller mentions about that? He says like this, the reason why Vedic philosophy is so perfect, he says, it's so perfect because the rishis were very successful in developing this philosophy. Very successful, he says there. Not only one branch of philosophy, he says, not only Vedantam, even the logic side, Tarkam, Ayurvedam, in so many areas also, they succeeded such a perfection in their analysis and understanding. He says like that. The reason for that, he says, in the time of the sages, there was no media, there was no propaganda, there was no editors editing the things, And there was no newspapers and no television and any kind of, there was not even any audience they had. When all these things comes in, what happens? All our activity then becomes a show. It will happen. You can't help it. That's why in the modern world, spirituality has become a completely a glamour business. Spirituality is not glamour. Spirituality is something, the internal world development, inside development. That's not happening. Everything else is happening in the spiritual life today. You can see that. Max Muller says there, because in the Rishi's time, they didn't have any of these things. What today what we have, television. They didn't have to appear in 10 different channels every day and show to the world how spiritual you are. You didn't have to do that. There was no necessity for that because the world wasn't like this. There was no television, there was no media, there was no internet, and there was none of these rubbish what we have got now. And because of that, what they were doing was very genuine. And because it was so genuine, they were very perfect as well in what they did. Now, whatever you do, no matter who you are, people who are doing, in the, even in the spiritual world, you will notice this, there is always this element of how the public will think about me. What the public will say about, therefore, we start making compromise to everything, at every step. Is it not? That, oh, public should not go against it. So in order to please the public, I have to change the philosophy a little bit here and there and adjust the things. But they didn't have to do that. The sages never had to do such a thing. They went to the forest and they did everything in the forest, first thing. So they were not showmasters. They were not in the show business. They were not expecting anything from this world. It was complete development inside what was happening to them. That is a big difference. Max Muller says this in his write-up. He says here, therefore, they never wanted anybody to evaluate them. They never wanted anybody to praise them or to criticize them. They were not interested in that. That was not their way of doing things. And such a thought even never occurred in their mind in the time of the sages. That's what you find, that such a thought even, they never occurred into their mind. Therefore, they could completely focus on the thing, concentrate on that, and work and produce something very genuine and very original. You will see that in the Vedic literature. Very genuine and very original. It's not tainted with any of these things. Because you can see this very practical in life also. That as soon as it becomes a glamour business and glamour show, what will happen? Everything will be, it will be tainted with the impact of the media, isn't it? The media, how we can see how powerful that is. If we do something in spiritual life, we must make sure it all comes in all the newspapers. And, Rath Yatra, has it come on the telly? We have to make sure. We have to make sure that all the telly companies, television companies, BBC, ITV, everybody should be there to show what we have done on the Rath Yatra. People should know. That is our mind is become like that now. In other words, what we want is recognition from the world. The rishis never wanted any recognition from this world. They didn't care for this world. Therefore, Max Muller says, Max Muller was a learned person, is a German philosopher who spent his time in London. If you read Max Muller's life here, how he spent his time, very hard way he lived here. But he was so absorbed in the Upanishads that he says, this knowledge I haven't seen anywhere else. And he could only imagine that this has only happened because of this, that the rishis never looked for any recognition in this world. Therefore, they were original, very original, and whatever they produced were very, very genuine as well. Same thing later on. Schopenhauer, another German philosopher, he says the same thing about Upanishads. Schopenhauer was a famous German philosopher who took Upanishads very seriously. So you can see this, even those people who are thoughtful people, they can see the impact of the modern world in the spiritual life now, what is happening here. So, so we are living in a time in this world which is particularly very bad. In that sense, very bad. Because for spiritual life, adhyatmam, glamour is more important now than anything else. Sometimes you feel also when you see all these things, you don't want this spiritual life anymore. Because seeing the type of spiritual life what you is on offer today in the world, you feel like throwing out this whole spiritual kind of life and doing something different than all these things. When you make sure that somewhere in the world you sit there peacefully, some corner if you can go and sit somewhere and go through the Shastram and get a deeper understanding like the sages have given us. And because we are like this, that is why when we read Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, we find it so difficult. Because our mind has become like this, infected by the world. So the very nature of spiritual life has changed so much. Those who are watching the television, they will know these things. Because there is more spiritual personalities on the television than the film actors now. You can see Asta. This, what is that, so many television channels continuously bringing one after the other, churning out like everybody is spiritual. They're all talking about spiritual things and spiritual life. But film actors and cinema personalities, there's more spiritual personalities, more glamorous now in spiritual life. And nobody is behind in these things. Whether it is Hindu gurus, or Christian priests, or Islamic prophets, doesn't matter. They are all competing each other on this. And the amount of number of channels who are propagating religion through television, if you look, you will see there that in every aspect they are there. So many channels exclusively for this God's channel or this channel or that channel, Peace TV, and so many things like that. Everywhere it is the same thing going on. So normally it is like this, that one who has inner realizations, very inner, if he has developed inside, he won't be too concerned about the propagation of it to that extent. Because if his attention has gone inwards, antarmukham, antardrishti, if this has had, that if it happens, if it hasn't happened, it is they who need this necessity for this kind of publicity. Once who hasn't got the inside development, because that is the reality. Spiritual life is like that. So because this spirituality in a person, it is impossible to bring it outside. It is a thing that happens inside a person, and to show it to others is not possible with that. It is not possible with that. So, and if you do like that, bring it outside, you won't be able to stay spiritual very long. That's the difficulty. Spiritual development is such a thing that when it develops inside, it's knowledge, it's realization, isn't it? When knowledge and realization happens, have you seen any time Sudev Goswami looking for a television channel to talk his Bhagavatam? Or any one of them, the Dattatreya Maharshi, Jadabharata, Sudev Goswami, and so many others in the Bhagavatam you will see. They all had, once the realization has happened, for them this world is no meaning to them anymore. It is only those who have not perfected that way, not reached the perfectional stage, they want the recognition in the world. They want the recognition in the world. So, so when that happens, what will happen is, when they come like that, and when they fall into this world, when they fall on this world, and then they fall down. When they become spiritual like this, in this way, and then they present to the world, they are very spiritual, and then they fall down. Then what happens? The whole world will pounce upon them and tell them, look, you are number one rascal, you are cheating everybody, you are fool, this one, that one. It's not their fault actually. It is and it is not the fault of spiritual life either. This is the nature of the world. That's all, you have to take it like that. It's not their fault because that's what they knew. They didn't know anything else. And spirituality is not fault because spirituality is not nothing to do with all these things. So you have to blame for what happens. The world is like that, that's all. Therefore, adhyatmam, spiritual knowledge is not possible to propagate. It's not possible to propagate. One occasion, what happened was, the head of the math in Sringeri, Chandrasekhar Bharati was highly inward looking. So inward looking he was, didn't know what was going on in this world. To such an extent, he has withdrawn from the world. And it was recognized and accepted by all the great personalities at that time, Chandrasekhar Bharathi is living in that body for the body to drop and go. That was the state in him. He lived in this world. So inward looking, Antardrishti. In the Bhagavatam, you will see this word many places, isn't it? Vivikta Drishtehe, it says in the Bhagavatam. That Srinarada Maharshi, when he went to Vedavyas, Vedavyas says to him that you are a personality who is traveling all around the world, inside, outside, you know everything what is going on. Is it not? He says to him. So Srinarada Maharshi is very inward looking nature. He knows those things. Vedavyas is like that. All the great sages are like that. So Shubhramarshi is like that. So Chandrasekhar Bharathi's case, he was very much like that. At a very early age, his life is very interesting to read. If you read, then you will see there. Very early age, this intense desire for, like we mentioned before, that seriousness in spiritual life developed, and so absorbed in the Shastram everything, and realizations came to him in such a deeper level that the world outside did not matter to him anymore. Because he was so advanced spiritually, the king of Mysore installed him as the head of the Math of Sringeri. Sringeri Math is known for its knowledge, very well known for its knowledge. All the great personalities in that Sringeri Parambara is highly learned. But this particular sannyasi, Chandrasekhar Bharathi, was well known for at that time. When he was installed there, he told the king that I will not be interested in your Math affairs. It's not, you can put me there if you want, but I'm not interested, he said. But then they wanted somebody like that, a spiritual personality, as the head of the Math. So the king insisted that you stay as the head of the Math. We will have somebody else to do the day-to-day administration, because after self-realization, to do all this vyavaharam is difficult. Because run day-to-day, running the Math means what? You have to make sure that all the buildings are in good shape. All the people who are living in the Math are making spiritual progress. You have to pay all the bills, electricity, water, whatever that is involved. Just like the mundane administration of this. For him, it was not of any significance anymore. So, Chandrasekhar Bharathi said that, that I couldn't do such things anymore. So, king said, you just stay there, but somebody else will manage the Math. In the arrangement, it went on like this for a few years. After that, Chandrasekhar Bharathi left and went away from the Math also. He moved away from there. It was no interest. So once in so one occasion, Chandrasekhar Bharathi was talking about Vedantam from the Upanishads to a group of people. And he did mention this, of the difficulty of propagating Vedantic knowledge, Upanishads knowledge, to others. Because it is not possible to bring spiritual knowledge into a mundane level. That's not possible. If you try to do that, what will happen is, the whole thing will become polluted with this mundaneness in there. Spiritual knowledge requires a certain frame of mind, a certain way of life, a certain discipline in life, and certain habits in a person. And that very genuine and serious approach in Shastram and perfection in life. As Krishna is mentioned there in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasayalmiya Buddhi Ekeha Gurunandana. He has got one goal and that is fixed on that. He cannot make compromise there. Now, if you start making compromise, what will happen? Whole thing will become very mundane, and that's what has happened now. You can see that in the world, isn't it? So that will happen. And then we will say that, well, we are all in it together. So we cannot be in it together. It's an individual business, spiritual life. You have to look after your spiritual life. I have to look after my spiritual life. That is completely individual thing it is. You cannot be based on a community or a society or an organization. No, it is totally a personal thing. Krishna is talking to me and I have to take it, these direct instructions to me from Bhagavad Gita. You have to take it in the same way. Not that it is for one organization Krishna has given Bhagavad Gita. No. Krishna has given Bhagavad Gita to each and every individual. Like Arjuna, keeping Arjuna in the front, Krishna spoke. And it is similarly, Krishna is talking to us also in the same way. So, Chandrasekhar Bharathi was talking from Upanishads in one situation with many students. So, he mentioned there that if you are not serious about this, just don't waste your time. Go live your life in this world like everybody else is doing. Be satisfied with that. And you can have your social life or community life or whatever life you want, and be satisfied, happy together, have a bit of kirtan and a bit of prasadam and a few football games and matches or all kinds of things. This is all necessary in the community living, isn't it? Community living, you need all these things, football matches and cricket matches and all kinds of things. You do all that. Don't get worried about spiritual life too much. When you are ready, you come, and that time we will see, he said. So somebody asked him this question at that time, that you are also propagating now, talking about this to these students. You know what Chandrasekhara Bharathi said? Chandrasekhara Bharathi says to him that what I am doing, he said, after studying Upanishads, Brahma Sutram, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam, and many other Vedic literature, I started seeing something, that this knowledge they have left behind us, the great sages, what they have left behind, I'm trying to get a small, very small percentage of that. I'm trying to enjoy it myself. I'm trying to enjoy it myself, a small percentage of that, what they have left behind. And when somebody comes and asks me something about it, I'm willing to share with them. But if by chance you have thought, I am into propagation of all these things, please forgive me, he said. Please, my greatest apologies to you. I had no such intention to propagate these things, because I know it will not work if I start propagating this. It's not going to work. Because what will happen is, the mundane vasanas inside us, all of us, is so strong, we will bring Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam into it, and we will make a complete mockery of the whole thing. That's what's happening all the time. You can see when people, when they want, they are not ready for spiritual life. All they want is some comfortable, fun and good life in this world. And they feel that I can add a little bit of spirituality into it so that my life is comfortable. That will not work. Krishna is not for that kind of spiritual life. Krishna's Bhagavad Gita will not help you in that way. It will go on like this. That's why, that is what it has come to now. In that level, things are happening in this world. You can see that. And therefore, it's becoming very difficult to talk about this. So Krishna's point is that it is not for propaganda, or because all these things has to be spoken. Only then you will find it beneficial, this chapter. You'll find when this chapter will be beneficial only if you understand it in this particular way. So, Bhagavad Gita, we will sometimes you advertise, isn't it? Pravachanam, pravachan. In all the flyers you will see at different festivals, Ramanavami will advertise like this. There will be a lot of flyers distributed. That time will say, oh, kirtan, pravachan, prasadam, or so many things will mention in that flyer, isn't it? Bhagavad Gita is not for pravachan. It won't work for pravachan. You can make pravachan, but nothing will happen. It's all, it will go on like this. Therefore, whether you have understood with your brain or not, if you give enough attention to it, Shraddha, you hear that, so you will notice this one thing. Bhagavad Gita is not talking about a God who is sitting far away somewhere, who is sitting somewhere far away from us. Or it's not talking about a world whom we have not seen so far. Many other places, that is how it's presented, isn't it? That they talk about a God who is sitting somewhere else and judging us from there. Or it talks about a world which we have not seen. They say in different names, isn't it? Heavens, or where you go and enjoy and all kinds of facilities are offered there for your happiness. Things like that. But instead, you will understand when you study Bhagavad Gita carefully, you will see Bhagavad Gita is talking about us right now. He's talking about us. Though primarily about our own basic problems with this body and us. With this body and us. That is the topic that is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. You can look at it, Bhagavad Gita, and see for yourself. See how many places Krishna has spoken about a world after death. Or where Krishna is spoken about a God after death whom you will meet. Nowhere. Whole of Bhagavad Gita, if you study, this is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is right here, now, in this world. While we live here, what should happen to us? This is what Bhagavad Gita is focusing about. Bhagavad Gita never tells us about a world after death, where you will be, where you will go, and what facilities are offered there, what's happiness there. Things are not discussed at all in the Bhagavad Gita. So that is why, and our own basic problems, that is what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. And Bhagavad Gita is telling us, what's our problem here, and if you want, you can solve it. That's what how Bhagavad Gita puts it to front of us. You can say, you can't say solve it. Krishna is saying here, you can actually dissolve it. That's how Krishna puts it to us. You don't say you can solve it, you can dissolve it. There's a difference between the two. Solving and dissolving. Isn't it? In deep sleep, you don't solve it. You dissolve it. Is it not? So say for example, whole daytime you have some heavy distress. Something went wrong in life. And you thought about it and thought about it and thought about it till the night time, till you go to bed. You didn't find any solution to the problems. And in that process, you slept. You fell into deep sleep. And in the deep sleep, actually, you're not solving the problem. What has happened there? You're actually dissolving it. You're dissolving it. Actually, you're dropping the problem. Is it not? You're actually dropping the problem. Spiritual life also, this is what we do. In spiritual life also, this is what we are doing. Because all the problems of this world, what you have now, brain creates that. Brain and the mind together, they create the problem. What is our basic problem? Basic problem is this. The body itself is the basic problem. That's where all the problem begins with. Isn't it? The body itself is the basic problem. So what are we trying to do? What we are trying to do is there any way we can get out of these problems of the body? That's what everybody is looking for, isn't it? When we get bodily problems, first thing what we do is that, is there anything I can do to solve the problem of the body? So, till about say 25, 30 years old, this spiritual inquiry does not happen very easily to people up to about 30 years old. And the reason for that is the same thing. Because the body is in a healthy state. That's why it doesn't happen. Very rarely it happens below 30, 25, 30 years old. Generally, in most of the people, they start thinking seriously about it only when they know that nothing can be done about it, about this body. And this is the same reason why up to the age of say 25, 30, you don't become very serious about the inquiry. If anybody is showing a lot of seriousness before, it's a very, very rare thing that happens that before that age. And if it happens, you should consider that it's a good fortune. That person is able to think in a deeper level. But that's very, very rare thing. So, because the body is healthy and you have the strength in the body, therefore energy is there, therefore you will start thinking that it's not necessary. Spiritual life is not necessary. So, just like you are traveling in a boat and trying to cross the sea, and only while half the way through on your journey, you realize that there is a hole in the boat and the water is getting in through the boat. And similarly, in the lifetime, also in our lifetime, which is like a journey in this boat, only halfway we start realizing that the boat is going to capsize or boat is going to give trouble. Boat is not going to stay forever. So only similarly, here and there in the problem starts in the body. And it is at that time we start thinking about it seriously. So that's why now you can see also when you get older, what happens is, oh, you get a stomachache, then you start thinking when to get the appointment with GP, or you'll try with whatever tablets or Gaviscon or something, whatever you know, you can buy it. If nothing is working, you'll also, those who have got internet facility, they look at the internet and look at the internet and see what problems are can happen to the stomach. And then you may probably start interpreting, is it cancer or is it something more than that? So many things, doubts start coming into the mind. Or you will say like this and fear develops. Is it cancer or is it ulcer or something like that? all sorts of thoughts will develop seriously inside. So on the one side, we have the physical problems. And on the other side, there is fear also inside. What's going to happen now? What's going to happen now? So while talking to others, you have the fear inside. And while staying in this body, this fear that body is going to go. What is going to go? Bhartrihari puts it very nicely. This fear, how does that fear develops in a person? There's a famous verse in the Vairagya Shatakam. He says that, Bhoge Rogabhayam. Bhoge Rogabhayam. Kule Chudibhayam. Vittan Rubalash Bhayam. Bhoge Rogabhayam means that when you are enjoying something in this world, always the fear, will I get sick? Isn't it? With this body, you can't enjoy anything perpetually. It's not possible. As much as you try to enjoy, there's also the fear inside, will I get sick? Say, for example, you had a wonderful feast. If you overeat, you can get sick. Isn't it? So, while eating, you know, although you like to eat everything, but still you can't eat because you know you will get sick. Same thing with so many other sense enjoyment. If you enjoy excessively, you will get sick. Bhoge roga bhayam. Then, kule chudi bhayam. Suppose somebody is coming from a well-to-do family. A family is very well reputed, or family is in a, everybody is respectable there. In the society, I'm saying, society respects certain people, or he comes from a rich family, or comes from a, high of, the aristocratic families and things like that. So they have a name behind them, isn't it? Because he comes from that family. For them, what is their fear? Will I lose my good name? Will our family will lose the good name? That's what I say. Kulech kule chudibayam. The chuti, fall down. Will they will we fall? Something will happen in the family. We'll lose our good reputation. Things like that. Then, kulech chudibayam. And, vittam rubalal bhayam. With the money, we always have the fear that you can see that in the people, that fear. Isn't it? The people are always fearful that will we lose our money. So what do? They pay the most minimum tax what they have to pay. That's a big issue now discussed. Is it moral or immoral? It's a very interesting question if you think about it. Government brings certain rules and says to us that people should pay according to this rule. You should pay the taxes, right? And some clever people, and there is these people called accountants who give you very good advice about it. It's very interesting. And everybody is asking this question now, isn't it? So what they're saying is that very rich people, famous people, their income is very high. They are paying only 1% tax and 2% tax or whatever that is. Why? They've got these advisors called accountants who tells them how to manipulate your accounts in such a way so that you pay the very minimum tax. So they are legally, they are perfect. They have done the right thing. But there is this poor man who is working and he is paying his 30% and 40% tax. So the question is coming, and who doesn't have any accountant to advise him what he is earning? So this is an important discussion going on now about some prime minister said something and all. Just santarbhiyam. I mean, out of this context, I am saying that. They are also thinking that if I don't save money by not paying taxes, my position in the society will go. Who will respect me? Then I'm not anymore rich. Suppose I'm earning 10 million. If 7 million is given in taxes, then what's the point in working like this? He's thinking like that. So he finds some way to avoid the taxes, to minimize it. And the government rules are such that if you act within the rules, and the advice of the tax, the accountants, tax advisors, or what do they call it? Independent financial advisor and all they call it, isn't it? Yeah. With all their help, you can do all this manipulation and you end up paying 1% or 2% tax compared to the one who has paid 30 and 40% tax, isn't it? So there, that is what this is. Vittam Nirpalal Bhayam, that fear of the taxman, that he is going to take away everything from me. So he is living in that constant fear. He is living in the constant fear. മാനേ ധൈന്യഭയം ബലേ രിപുഭയം രൂപേ ജരായ ഭയം. ദീസ് ആർ ഓൾ ഡിഫറെൻറ്റ് കൈൻഡ്സ് ഓഫ് ഫിയേഴ്സ് ഇൻ അസ്. ഭർതൃഹരി ഈസ് സെയിങ് ദിസ്. ഭർതൃഹരി വാസ് എ വെരി ഗ്രേറ്റ് പേഴ്സണാലിറ്റി ഇൻ വിക്രമാദിത്യസ് കോർട്ട്. സോ ഭർതൃഹരി സെയ്സ് ദെയർ ദറ്റ് രൂപേ ജരായ ഭയം, ദറ്റ് will I stay like young like this forever? Body is changing, hair is going gray, teeth is falling off, and hands are started shaking, and people started recognizing that you are an old man. So you are losing your youth and old age is taking over. That is what is called rupe jaraya bhayam, that my form, body is changing, I'm not fit anymore, nor I don't look any more attractive. People will look at me and start saying that the old problem is coming. So that's the thing. Bale ripu bhayam. One who is physically very strong, when they see somebody else who is stronger than them, they feel fearful about them. Oh, he's much more stronger than me. You can see this among the athletes and the sportsmen and the football players and all that. They are also each other frightened when they see a much more skilled football player. A man who doesn't have that skill, he feels frightened about him. So fear is level in all levels. People are experiencing the fear. So then he says here, Shastre vadi bhayam and gune khala bhayam kaye kritanda bhayam sarvam vastu bhayanvidam bhuvi mrinam vairagyam eva bhayam. That is Bhartrihari's conclusions on that. Bhartrihari is saying there, that Shastra Vadi Bhayam, suppose you have studied all the Shastram very well, but if you see someone who knows more than you, then you have fear of that person. Shastra Vadi Bhayam and Gune Khala Bhayam Kaye Kridanda Bhayam. So fear of the wicked people, or in body on fear of death, all these things, different kinds of fear, he says it exists. And Sarvam Vastu Bhayanvidam, all this is all these things in the Vastu Kridandad Bhayam, that is based on the body, these things will come. Bhartrihari says it will come. Vairagyameva Abhayam, he says, what will make you fearless is when you are completely in renunciation comes to a person. When he understands all these things, renunciation will come to him and he'll be free from that. He says like that. So here what we are discussing, that body, the basic problem is that the material body itself. The body itself is a problem. Body itself is a problem. So people are thinking, is there any way we can get rid of all the problems from this body? That's what we are trying to do, isn't it? So as I mentioned, up to a certain age, 25, 30 years, you don't feel, because body is in a good shape and it is healthy enough. Therefore, spiritual thoughts don't develop at that time. So, therefore, he says here that we take shelter of so many other things because of this fear only. Because of the fear of the fear of illness, diseases, we take shelter of so many things like doctors, medicines, everything. And if you are a wealthy person, you will try to take shelter of the wealth. If you have a lot of wealth, you will find shelter of the wealth. So, in the Bhagavadam, how it mentions like that is, if you remember that Hiranyakashipu, the word itself is, Hashipu means bed, Hiranya means gold. Because he had so much gold and so wealthy he was, he made his bed made of gold. And that's how he slept, Hiranyakashipu. The name is like that, isn't it? So, when you have all these things, still you can get sick in this world. You have a lot of wealth, but still you can get sick. So, that is one side. Other side, suppose you are very attached to somebody and you live in a life like that with family members and everything, and there is some peace in that environment, you are feeling some happiness. Suddenly, by Krishna's arrangement, one of you is taken away from that. And broke, that relationship is broken completely. Again, distress comes at that time, isn't it? So, anything can happen to them. Or, this kind of distress is same to everybody. Is same to everybody. That is what it says here. That whether you are a very rich person or whether you are a very poor person, this kind of distress will be there, because these problems are coming from the material nature. When it is like that, when all these problems, there is no solution to that, the point Krishna is making here is that what have we received practically by all the so-called scientific development? What did we gain from that? There is no answer to that, because if you look at these things, you can see that all this development is not particularly any great achievement in that sense. If you look at it this way, what does the science does is that science has given us a lot of comforts in this world, in the world outside. You can see that also, how the science has changed our life in the last, even if you look at the last 10-20 years, the development of this aircraft and mobile phones and internet and all, it's all continuously changing our world. And many things what you experience today is mentioned in the Puranas, isn't it? In a way that people traveling by airplanes, demigods traveling by airplanes, they have also developed in different ways the same powers. Navayogis traveled. They could change the body depending on the planets where they wanted to travel. So a lot of things you can see that what we are here glorifying now in the modern science, these things were possible to achieve through different ways even among the olden times. People have done that. For example, if you look into the third canto of Bhagavatam, you can see there, Kardama Prajapati created one whole planet for Devahuti Devi to have the honeymoon together. They traveled together in that planet, and they were going to the heavenly planets and many other places they have visited together for a very long period of time. That was their holiday, was like that. That's how they lived, they had their holiday. If you look in the third canto, you will see there. Maitreya Maharshi says to Vidura that this was the way they spent their time, Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi. It is not some story that they have written there. It was possible for them, because when Kardama Prajapati was so advanced in the yoga system, that when he saw that Devahuti Devi had a desire to enjoy life, Kardama Prajapati asked Krishna to send an airplane for him. And it was sent for him from the Vaikuntham, specifically for this purpose. And if you read the description of that aeroplane, even today we don't have an aeroplane like that. When you read that description of that aeroplane and the facilities in there, our aeroplane, we have got economy, world traveler, business class and first class. This is the best what we have got here. Or even if you take the executive jets, people who are flying around in this, it is not that comfort what you find in the Devahuti Devi's aeroplane. There, if you read the walls, how they were arranged, and not only that, that aeroplane will not fall when the fuel runs out. It could stay in the floating in the world. So these are yogic siddhis they are. They are not given importance in the Vedam so much. It's only telling us in different times in the history, different civilizations had this capacity to develop technology and science in different ways, through yoga process or through the material process, whatever we have now in this world. So what the point here is that all this is fine. Krishna says in different times all these things have happened. So, but just like a dream, that that's the way it is, that when you start comparing this life today, we are thinking now, only now we have all these things in this world, like the aeroplanes and the space travel and all, only today it has happened. No, it has happened in the history many times before also, but in different ways they have developed that capabilities in different ways. But as far as I am concerned now, what has changed in me? This is the interesting question I have to ask. All these developments and technology and advancement and all, it hasn't helped me, the person. I still have to go through birth, death, old age and disease. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed in me as far as I am concerned, isn't it? Maybe I had all these experiences in my mind through traveling here, traveling there. So, just like this, that similar simple experience, that in my sleep I went to America and spent some time, but when I woke up I am still in London. Nothing has changed. It's a similar situation like that. I'm seeing all these things and you're dreaming about all that, but in reality, nothing has changed. That is the Krishna's point. What is, you can't do anything about these things. What? Old age, disease and death. There is no solution to this problem. We have to really understand this. Why Krishna spoke about it so strongly in two places in the Bhagavad Gita. Janamarana mokshaya mamashrite etandiye te brahma tadvidu krishnam adhyalpam karma chakilam. One. And then, janamrityu jaravyadi dukkha doshanya darshanam. Because keeping all these things in mind, you have to analyze it. That material development, material advancement or scientific development has not solved any of our fundamental problems of life, which is this changing the body, accepting another body, sickness, old age, death. Where is the solution to that? There is never a solution to any of these problems. Therefore, Krishna is saying like that, that all these things what we now see is like a magic. So many things are happening in this world. But we what the result is, because we got absorbed in all these things, we forget about ourselves, our own well-being, our own welfare. So, and we are still the same person when we didn't have all these things. Nothing has changed. And there is no solution to my distress. There is no peace inside. There is no fulfillment inside with any of these development inside. So after seeing all these things, thinking about it, analyzing it, one who throws away all these things from inside, Krishna says, he is called Mumukshu. In Upanishads, that is how it is addressed. Pariksha Lokan Karmachitan Nirveda Mayal Agridakradena Tadvijnanartham Saguruveva Abhikachel Shamil Pani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. It's a famous Upanishad statement. That when one has come to spiritual life, if he is in this state, what this verse is saying, what is that? Pariksha Logan Karma Chitan. He has experimented with everything in this world. And what has happened to him? Nirveda Mayal Agrita Kritena. He has understood this one thing, that Nirveda Vairagyam, renunciation has happened to him. How? Agrita Kritena. Agrita Kritena means that anything I get from my effort in this world will eventually go. It won't stay. All these things, scientific development in this world, is by your effort you can get it. But one day it will leave you and go. It will not stay with you. None of this scientific development will stay with you. It will go, isn't it? Whether it's a mobile phone or television or car or airplane, whatever it is, you have to leave them and they'll go. The Nirveda Maya Lagrata Kridena. Therefore, one who has come to that understanding that none of this is of any use to me at the end, tadvijnanartham sagurumeva abhigachet, such a person, for the sake of self-realization and knowledge, he should approach a spiritual master, shamilpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam, and that spiritual master should be such, he should be brahmanishtam, he should have realized the truth. And approach him, shamilpani, shamit means kushagras in the hand, with folded hands like this, approach him and take his shelter, and he should be a Shrotriyam. Shrotriyam means one who has realized that truth himself. Only then it will have its effect. Shamilpani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. Sadvijnanartham Sadgurumeva Abhigachyan Shamilpani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. This is the Upanishad's statements about that. So, whatever you have achieved through these scientific efforts or discovery or invention, it's all at the end is of no use. Is it not? As far as your personal level, your problems are concerned, nothing has been solved. You are still getting sick. You are still becoming old. You are still dying and you still have to accept another body. That hasn't been sorted yet. Those issues have not been sorted yet. So, those things are there. And you have to analyze that and think about that, and you can even use them in your life, but at the same time, you have to keep on asking this question inside, has this really helped me in my life? Has this really helped me in my life? So, because perfection of life, as Krishna is concerned, that inner fulfillment, shanti, anandam or happiness, what one has to experience from the soul, and not accepting another material body again, and finishing up this business here with this body is the perfection as far as Krishna is concerned. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is addressed to those people who are looking for that. Not for those who wants to live a comfortable life in this world and make their life happy in this world. For them, it won't help. Bhagavad Gita is no use to them. So, keeping that in our background, we'll discuss it next Saturday. We'll start with this 8th chapter then. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.